You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
This month marks two major milestones for Vancouver's InSight, North America's only sanctioned, supervised injection site. 10 years ago, InSight first opened its doors to provide harm reduction services to people who inject drugs. Since that time, there have been 1.8 million visits to the site and not one overdose death among clients. The second milestone, September 30th, marks the two-year anniversary of the historic Supreme Court of Canada ruling that found the federal health minister had violated the Charter of Rights of clients of InSight. The court said it was unconstitutional for the minister to deny InSight the exemption to the drug laws the facility needed to operate and ordered the minister to grant them that exemption. Groups from across Canada are celebrating that milestone through education and activism campaigns. Pivot Legal Society has advocated alongside drug user groups and activists for InSight for over a decade. Scott Bernstein is a lawyer at Pivot and co-counsel for InSight at the Supreme Court of Canada. He also works with the Red Eye Collective. Good morning, Scott.
Morning, Lorraine.
10 years ago, what was the motivation for having a supervised injection site in Vancouver?
So it seems like such a long time ago because things really have changed markedly. But the situation in Vancouver was it was literally declared a public health emergency by the city of Vancouver and the chief medical officer. And the what had happened was, well, as you know, the downtown east side is actually home to thousands of injection drug users, and in the 90s. We saw a rapid increase of overdose deaths. And so it went, in a couple years, it went from double digits, 15 or so, up to triple digits, hundreds. And so the community really became activated about this and were, you know, having marches with coffins in, down the street and crosses set up in Oppenheimer Park. And so this really was a public health emergency. We saw rises in transmission of HIV and hepatitis C rates that they paralleled what we were seeing in the developing world. So they looked at the situation here and really saw this was a public health crisis. And, you know, and it naturally came about that a supervised injection site was the way that we should go to save people's lives.
I remember at the time it was quite a radical idea, but now it's 10 years later and there hasn't been one death despite all of those safe injections.
Absolutely. And as you said, there's been about 1.8 million visits to InSight, and they on average they get about 600 or 700 people a day come through, and sometimes it's the same people coming multiple times. But it's really an active facility, and what they've done is, you know, there's been a lot of research around InSight. It was started as a pilot project in a research study, and you know, it was set up with this goal of stabilizing people's health and also providing an inroads to healthcare. So a lot of the people that were injecting drugs were on the margins of society, and so this was a way, you know, they weren't walking into hospitals and doctors' clinics, and this was a way that services could be set up where people could walk in and actually see a nurse or a doctor or somebody to support them.
Excellent. Now, for those who don't know what goes on at InSight, what happens behind the doors of the clinic?
So it's very friendly. You know, the one of the things I like pointing out is on the front door of InSight, it says "Welcome to InSight," and it's actually welcoming. And you think with people who are injection drug users, they're some of the most stigmatized people in our society, and there are very few places where they actually are welcomed as who they are. And so the first thing is they walk in that door, they're welcomed by friendly staff and people they know. They sign in usually with an alias. They receive sterile injection equipment. If people are unfamiliar with how to inject more safely, like how to make sure they're not getting skin abscesses and other things that might come, people can teach them that. Nurses can show them how to do that. They get assigned to one of the 12 stainless steel booths. It looks very medical inside. It's not like an opium den like some people might imagine. It's very clinical. And they basically inject their own drugs so that nobody provides drugs to anybody. People bring in their own drugs and they inject in front of a healthcare professional, a nurse. And so the act of supervising somebody injecting is one of the most important things there, because if somebody overdoses, there's immediately things that the nurse can do. So they can administer Narcan, which reverses the overdose, or oxygen. And so after, there have been thousands of overdoses at Insight, but no deaths in the 10 years it's been operating.
So it sounds like it also operates as, even though the primary objective is to provide a safe injection site, that it's part of a continuum of health services then for
absolutely people. And so people, they, you know, as I said, they, people don't really have access to medical care. They don't get it. They could if they went there, but they just don't, because that's not in their circle of things. So when they walk in, though, they can get treated for superficial cuts and bruises and other things that happen. If people are homeless, they often experience like a pretty rough situation on the street, and so they can get some medical care for that. They can also get referred to social services. Like, one of the things that Insight does best is hook people up with people who can help them with housing or with counseling or detox if they want that and they're ready for that. And so it's really it's meeting drug users where they're at, providing them a safer place where they can inject drugs free from criminal sanction and under the supervision of a nurse. And then if they need more, they can get it there.
Now, the on-site detox center opened above Insight, and it's been there since about 2007. How does that work?
So it's actually a really, you know, people often frame this conversation as like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be supporting drug users. You know, you're just enabling them. You're just, you know, you're just keeping them in this process of doing things. Well, actually, people who are advocates of harm reduction are also advocates of getting people off of drugs that harm them. And so I think people that work with drug users really see firsthand some of these harmful impacts of having a long-term addiction and drug use. And so what happens is, if somebody comes into Insight, they meet with nurses and staff and peers who are there. And if somebody says, you know what, I'm ready to get off drugs, they're immediately shuttled upstairs to the second floor, which is the detox center. And so there they can have a private room with their own bathroom, which is actually really important, because detox is physically very, you know, hard and embarrassing and difficult for people. So getting some privacy is important. And so they detox. Once they're detoxed, they can even have the option to move up to the third floor, which is transitional housing, and they can stay there until they have a place to land in the community or where they're going. And so one of the problems that Onsite deals with is the fact that there are not a lot of treatment centers that are open and available to people, and there's often wait lists. And so the window, when somebody says, I want to get off a drugs, I'm really ready to do it, the window is very small until their addiction and craving kicks in again. And so it's really important to strike and have something that the person can be moved into immediately.
Now, in the process of operating in the downtown East Side for 10 years, Insight's become one of the most thoroughly studied healthcare facilities in Canada. What's the research shown about that?
Yeah, so the Insight was set up. It's the first kind of facility of its kind in Canada. And so it was set up as a research study to see, you know, how does this work? We knew the experience of Australia and in Europe that were running supervised injection sites for many years since the 90s. But we wanted to look a little bit more about the local population. So in the process of operating in the last 10 years, there have been over 30 peer-reviewed research studies about Insight, and those were published in 15 different journals. And so they showed all kinds of important things, that Insight increased the public order, there were less needles in the neighborhood, less public injecting, there were people were engaging in safer injection practices. They reduced sharing of needles, which leads to transmission of hepatitis C and HIV. And they were assessing referrals to other services like OnSite, like I said. And so they also showed it was cost effective. And ultimately, it led to a 30% increase in uptake of addiction treatment. So, you know, if you want people to be in addiction treatment, the best way to do that is provide harm reduction and supervise injection.
Yeah, those are impressive results.
Yeah.
InSite operates with a legal exemption from the criminal drug laws. And in 2008, the Portland Hotel Society, the nonprofit that runs InSite, along with Vancouver Coastal Health, Vandu, and two clients of InSite, challenged the federal government's refusal to continue that exemption. What was that case all about?
So it was actually a really unique case where drug users and the services that were providing, organizations that were providing services to drug users said it's a charter infringement for us to not have this service because it means that people are going to die, and their life is going to be put in danger. So it was basically grounded in Section 7 of the charter, which says you have a right to life, liberty, security of the person, and that can't be taken away unless under circumstances of principles of fundamental justice are complied with. And so the plaintiffs, they won at the BC Supreme Court. The federal government appealed again. It went to the BC Court of Appeal, won there, even bigger. And then it went to the Supreme Court of Canada and won there as well. And so what came out of that was the InSite had the permission to operate, and the Supreme Court of Canada ordered the federal minister of health to grant one of these exemptions to the criminal law that InSite needed.
Now the Supreme Court of Canada contemplated that other injection sites might be opened in Canada. Despite that decision, in the last 2 years, no new injection sites have been opened in Canada. What's the reason behind that?
Well, I think it's there's a couple of factors. So I think when InSite came to the court, everybody was sitting back, and there had been a lot of talk about, you know, we need one of these in Montreal, we need one of these in Toronto, but nobody was really taking a lot of action. They wanted to see what the court would do with InSite. Since that's happened, though, people are moving ahead, and so Quebec is the only province that actually has provincial government involvement in putting in one of these for one of these applications. And in the end, you know, people want to do it right. They know that the second injection site that gets approval is going to be really scrutinized. So they want to make sure there's a lot of this data in place here, and so they need to you know, come up with the evidence that says this is needed, that it's this, you know, community support, and there's reason for it, and so they're trying to make the case that it's a good idea to put the supervised injection site in place there, and there's a lot of public health outcomes that can be expected from that. So they're basically, you know, crossing their T's and dotting their I's and getting it ready, but applications for a couple cities should be imminent, and I'm thinking before the end of the year.
Now, Bill C-65, the Respect for Communities Act, was introduced by Parliament this past spring. How's that bill going to change things?
Right. So the federal government really, with this bill, they turned the court decision from the Supreme Court of Canada on its ear. And so where the Supreme Court of Canada had said, well, generally, you know, we should allow these places in Canada unless there's some obvious reason why not to. And this bill is going to turn around the other way and say that, you know what, these are an exceptions to the rule. And they're putting in 26 guidelines that groups are going to have to meet just to get in the door and have room for the minister to make this decision. So they're, you know, you're going to have to get letters of support from the police, hold community consultations, health authorities, you know, and just everybody has to write in letters of support. And any one of these people can put a logjam in the process by refusing to participate, give a letter, or by, you know, giving a negative response. So if the police didn't like the idea, they just wouldn't have to respond and put a letter in, and the process isn't going to go forward. And so I think this is, these this is probably setting up again for another constitutional challenge about putting impermissible barriers between something that's an otherwise legal service and people that need it. And so if Bill C-65 comes back, it died on the order paper when Parliament prorogued over the summer, but if it's reintroduced again and becomes enacted into law, I can see there's going to be more legal challenges around that.
Well, it's been an impressive 10-year project and really fighting against, you know, some big battles against some big pushback. So I'm really impressed. And we'll stay tuned to, I know there's a lot more developments that are happening. It's a big month. There's a lot going on this fall. So we'll stay tuned to that. I really, really appreciate your bringing us up to speed on this today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lorraine.
I've been speaking with Scott Bernstein. He's a lawyer and heads up Pivot Legal Society's Health and Drug Policy Campaign. Scott's also part of the Red Eye Collective. You can learn more about Pivot at their website, pivotlegal.org.